Hearing, I don't have any trouble hearing. I can hear sound.
Uh-huh.
But the apparatus that makes me distinguish one sound from another is what confused. I can't distinguish one word, one sound from another. It all sounds alike. I hear you talking, but I don't understand what you're saying. It's very good. If I hadn't lost my hearing, I'd still be working for somebody. But
sure.
I'm not, so.
Well, I'll try and talk, you know,
yeah,
as clearly as I can. I was first interested in the preparations made for the hiring of the police in 1948.
Preparation made for what?
For the hiring of the police of the black police in 1948. I was curious, particularly how Hartsfield prepared the white community for the black police.
Well, the way that came about, that really never was that much planning. It's something that I kind of stumbled on. First place, I was assigned at City Hall as an aide and a chauffeur to Mayor Key, way back there before Hartsfield. Well, on one occasion, I remember quite well, I made a reference of it in some of these books I wrote.
So that
40 years on the force. But one day at lunch, Mayor Key told me to be in the office at 2:30, which was a common thing. That happened often. But on this particular time, there was, at 2 o'clock, there was a committee of 12 citizens come in to see the mayor. And all of them was black. There's only one white man in the crowd, and all about some was black. But they'd come in to see the mayor, and what they wanted was they requested the mayor to employ Negro police. And he told them at the time that their request was reasonable, but it couldn't be done at that time. Before that can be done, we first got to educate the black people as well as white people to that point, and then we can do it.
Right.
You go back and I'll help you educate the white people, and you work on the black people. When the time comes, you come back and I'll appoint them. When they left, he wanted me to hear that conversation because there was the people that would be working on it all this period of time, and eventually, and he told me eventually it would happen, and I ought to be prepared. I ought to start studying the problem then, and be prepared when the time comes, be prepared to furnish some of the leadership, which is going to be highly controversial, and I ought to work on it. Well, it was a pretty ridiculous statement at the time to think that the mayor of Atlanta was advocating the employment of black police, but it was true. Mr. Key said the time's coming when they'll have to do that, and you'll have an opportunity to have the advantage of most people in the police department. You ought to start studying it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did. When I went to And occasionally, I went to New York and Chicago with Mr. Key, and I always would go down to the police department and talk to the chief, and especially ask him about how many Negro police he had and how he used them, and I started studying the situation. Well, 15 years later, when time comes, Hartsfield had already defeated Key and was the mayor. And he was the one that really put him on.
He wasn't ready at first, though, to put him. He wasn't ready to do it right when he was elected.
He wasn't what?
He wasn't ready to put black police on right when Hartsfield was elected, right when he came into office.
When Hartsfield was elected?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, later on.
It was, Keene was ready for it, but the day that I was in the office, he told me he was getting to be an old man and he would never live to see Negro police in Atlanta, but someday they would have them. an hour to be prepared to hit front of the leadership was where that came
from. Did Key ever do anything at all to prepare the white community?
Nothing except Mr. Key had a good understanding of the problem, and he was very closely associated with most Negro politicians. He got that support before anybody else did, but there was a reason for that. They had a recall election. They tried to recall Mayor Key, but it wasn't many Negroes could vote, but those that had bothered to register could vote. And those that was registered could vote, but there weren't many of them registered because they couldn't vote in a white primary. But the recall was a general election, and they could vote in the general election. So therefore, they voted for the first time on an election where it really counted. And that put him very close to him. He attended a lot of their meetings, and I know one of my jobs in driving around was keep up with the schedule, see where he was supposed to be, and see that he was there. I remember one time on Saturday, I said, this must be a mistake, is noticing the book here for you to be at Baptist Church on Mitchell Street at noontime Sunday. I said, that's a Negro church. He said, I know. Dr. Carter's a preacher out there. He's a Negro preacher, been there 50 years. We're celebrating his anniversary, and I'm going out there to have him celebrated today. That was the reason for me going. So that was one of the first times that I knew about his connection. But I remember going out there that day. I had never met or didn't know any educated blacks. Of course, there's lots of them, but I'd never had any occasion to meet them until out there. And when we got out to the church, they carried him on down and put him up on the pulpit. Well, as we went in the back door, I sat down on the first bench on the back in the back of the church and sat there. But I heard some of the most elaborate speeches that day when they were introducing Mr. Key and talking about Mr. Key from the educated Negroes. That was my first experience of hearing educated Negroes. And that was really the starting of the employment of the Negro police. I didn't have anything to do with putting them on. Mayor Hartsfield actually put them on, but he had Ralph Huey, an alderman. Huey introduced a resolution authorizing the city to employ 8 Negro police, was the first action taken. And Ralph Huey was the alderman that introduced it and authorized it, but the automatic board referred it to the police committee for a public hearing, and they wouldn't act on it until the chief of police put his recommendation on there. I had to put my recommendation on there before they signed it. Before they would vote on it. Well, as a result of the time it got to me, I was ready to sign it. And it worked pretty good. It created some real problems. It didn't create as many problems as some of the other changes in the law and integration law.
Let me get back to Mayor Key then didn't really do anything for the blacks at all.
Mayor Key didn't what?
Didn't do anything for the blacks?
He didn't do anything except he had a thorough understanding and he believed in it.
Yeah.
If he'd had an opportunity, he would have.
I see.
But he didn't take the bull by the horns and do it, and that's what he would have had to done, and he didn't. He wasn't ready to do that. He didn't do that. Then Hartsfield did it later.
Yeah. How did Hartsfield prepare the whites for acceptance of the blacks?
How did he prepare
the white community? The white community for black police?
Well, it was pretty well divided. You take the business people in Atlanta. Didn't make much noise about it, but generally they favored integration to an extent. See, the worst thing that happened to business was a demonstration or a riot. Therefore, business people was opposed to those things, demonstrations and riots. Therefore, they favored integration. Not as integration, but to prevent interference with their business.
Right.
And there's people like Mayor Hartsfield depended on business people. I remember in one of those books, must have been 4 years on the force, I think I named about a dozen business people.
I saw that.
Well, if you know it, I named Mr. Woodruff, I named Mr. Rich, I named all the prominent business people that Hartsfield referred to.
Mm-hmm.
He'd refer to them, and they would support Hartsfield and his activities in supporting the Negroes. And in the end, Ivan Allen, I don't know whether he'd been elected or whether he was just getting ready to run, but he was still took the leadership in establishing, for instance, settling the restaurant dispute.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the strike was, that's where the demonstration was. And then Ivan took the lead in helping them resolve the business people and the blacks, helping them meet and resolve those problems. They didn't integrate the restaurants until after the schools had been integrated. Tied that all together. Ivan had a very important part in that, even more so than Hartsfield did. Hartsfield advocated it, and he'd get somebody else to do it, but he'd never get on the firing lines himself. He would avoid it most of the time. And they used to say, Hartsfield's not for the nigger, he just wants to give them enough to keep them satisfied. And that seemed to be the way he handled it, but that seemed to be a good way for him to handle it. It served his purpose.
Back in the time of Mayor Key, all these white business leaders, Rich and the other ones, didn't care how the Negroes were treated in the city?
Well, so far as I remember, there was no white people advocating integration.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, if there were, I don't remember it, or it didn't come to Mr. Key's attention. Any time the subject came up and it come to his attention, well, Mr. Key was favored because I remember he had his family friends that was Catholic, for instance. There was a strong resentment against the Catholic. The Klan was very active, and that was an important part of the Klan. But Mr. Key would always take an open stand if these Catholic people, or Jewish people, anybody that there was discrimination against, he would always take that side. And as I recall, there wasn't many blacks being advocated at that time. There was a lot of the others, because it was more common to be against Catholics than it was blacks at that time. But Mr. Key was very liberal-minded and didn't mind saying so, and had that record and stood on it.
When you were at meetings with blacks before integration, before the blacks came into the police department, what type of things were discussed?
What was that?
At the meetings, you said in your books that you attended meetings with black leaders before the police department was desegregated.
Yeah.
What type of things were discussed before the black police were brought on the force between you and the black community?
Well, what kind of things were discussed at the meetings? Well, Roy White was a former resident of Atlanta. He later lived in New York somewhere. His father was killed here in Atlanta. And he was secretary of the NAACP. So he was always running the leadership, where the blacks were meeting and the NAACP was trying to develop reasons and ways to develop it. Roy Wilkins was one of the leaders who was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And I developed a very good relationship with Roy Wilkins. And Thurgood Marshall was the NAACP's lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I developed a very good relationship with both of them. And they were most helpful to me. They both made some pretty nice statements about me to the NAACP and to the IACP. I remember Thurgood Marshall once told the National Association of Chiefs of Police in New York, there was a meeting, we was having a meeting there, and Thurgood Marshall told them that they didn't have any police brutality in Atlanta for the simple reason you had a chief of police in Atlanta that wouldn't tolerate it. He told IACP that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was some truth in it, but it wasn't quite as strong as he made it, but it was most helpful that Thurgood Marshall was saying nice things about me.
Sure, sure. And this is back in the 40s? 1940s? Or
that was in I was elected president of IACP in 65, I guess. It was in probably in the 50s.
Did the black leaders give suggestions on how to bring blacks into the police?
The black leadership?
Give any suggestions to you about how to bring blacks into the police department?
Oh yeah, I had a good relationship. There was two people. Dr. Balter, Bill Balter, still a preacher.
Right.
Preacher here now. And Dr. the dead man's father, Martin Luther King Sr.
Right.
he was, those two was two that I could always depend on. I could go see them, or I could call them, and they'd come see me. Mm-hmm. We could talk about anything. And they'd try to help me find the answer to it. They were most helpful.
Did they agree to the restrictions on the black police?
Oh, yeah.
They did? Not arresting whites, things like that?
Oh, yeah.
They agreed to that?
So the Negro police did to themselves. They were very much for it. At that time, that helped the black police more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
The black police was having a hard time. They was having a difficult enforcement law. And what they're afraid of was somebody to create a situation just to get them involved, and they didn't want to get involved because they couldn't win if they got involved. So it was designed to help them, and they realized that it helped them.
When were the restrictions taken away? When could they arrest whites? When could they go to a white police station? When were all those things done away with?
When did they remove that?
Yeah.
I don't know, but there's an order that said time. Jimmy Venable and his organization and the Klan,
right,
came before the police committee. First, the black was insisting that the restrictions be moved, and the police committee was having a hearing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Venable and his Klan members were there to be heard, and they had statements to make and participated. And as a matter of fact, they persuaded Gillum, who was chairman of the police committee,
mm-hmm,
at that time, that they wouldn't change it today, but before we do change it, we'll let y'all be heard again. And after that went on for some discussion, then I got with Henry Bowden. And when we put the restrictions in originally, the Alderman Ag Board didn't vote on it. Well, they did vote on it too. They put it in the restrictions, but then the Ku Klux Klan's lawyer immediately appealed that to the Georgia Supreme Court, and the Georgia court heard it, and the court ruled in that case that the wisdom of the decisions of the chief of police and the performance of his lawful duty was not a matter for judicial review. They went overboard. That's not true, though. I mean, the courts had a right to review anything, but the court itself said they didn't. So they ruled in favor of the city, and that was it. So then when this came up, and they was trying to repeal it, and I was advocating to repeal it because it got to the point that, and I'd already been told that if it goes to the Supreme Court, they won't back it. So I talked about them, and I said, pointed out to Bowden that the Georgia Superior Court approved this, and Henry Bowden told me that I didn't have to have a legal opinion on it. I could just write an order repealing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was my regulations that I had put in, and I could take them out without a court ruling, and they would stand up, the force would support it. So I issued an order there one day. The restrictions imposed on the nigger police previously are hereby removed, period. And then he ruled that was law and no longer applied.
What was the reaction from the white community?
The reaction was from Gillum was real upset because he had promised him he would give him a hearing.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I had repealed it without a hearing. Didn't anybody have a hearing on it? So some of them was disturbed about it and some of them was upset.
Mm-hmm.
But generally it was generally accepted. I mean, it seemed to me at the time, and it seems now, that those that knew enough about the law and understood the law, that if the courts ever acted on it, they couldn't support that. They'd have to throw it out. And those of us that knew that, knew that it was going to be thrown out, weren't disturbed because we thought it was be thrown out anyway.
You mentioned in one of your books that the white police backed up the black police when they were in trouble.
The white?
The white police helped the black police when the blacks were in trouble.
You mentioned that the white police?
The white police backed up the black police when the black police were in trouble, when they needed help.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to know about that.
Well, that was one thing that disturbed me at the time. There were still a lot of people that opposed Negro police, some on the police force. And I was afraid if it ever come to where they had an opportunity, that they would oppose it, but that time never developed. It was called to my attention. If it ever came, if any police officer ever had an opportunity and objected to it, it was never called to my attention, because I never recall or never had a case called to my attention where a policeman objected to a Negro police being a policeman and participated in any way. But it got to the place to where anybody was fighting a policeman, physically fighting him, then the other police was on the police's side, whether he was black or white. That problem never developed as far as I was concerned.
Let me show you this. This is an article from the paper a few years ago. It's an article on the first black police.
Last finest trophies of color line. First black cops faced uphill battle.
Yeah, I want to show you this. They interviewed a few of them, and a few of the black police mentioned, for example, that, you know, here the whites drove the wagons and were not cooperative. They would pull up on the other side of the street. If you had an unruly passenger, a prisoner, they would just sit there and not help you. Remember that at all?
That's McKinney.
Right.
Doing the talking.
Right.
Well, McKinney was, that's him right there.
That's Liam McKibbins, huh?
He, would at times appear to be a troublemaker himself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall these problems developing.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about where
here it is, then, right here.
Well, James E. Billy McKinney, he's still getting a lot of publicity now.
Right, right.
But he wasn't one of the original. He was put on later.
He was number nine, I think.
But Brooks, B.O. Brooks was the captain in charge of the Negro Police, and we put McKinney on, and he hadn't been on very long. So Brooks told me one day, said, if you don't get rid of McKinney, he's going to cause us trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner you fire him, the better off y'all. If you don't, he's going to cause us trouble.
He stayed on a long time.
Huh?
He stayed on the force a long time, McKinney.
Not too long. We, in fact, we did fire him. He was all sick.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a racial demonstration at City Hall. And he went over there and carried his children to the demonstration McKinney did.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of being active when he was supposed to be all sick, mm-hmm. as a result, we suspended him and would have fired him, but he quit.
Here's a statement by Warren Cochrane from the Buffalo Eye. He says we had all kinds of difficulty with the white policemen trying to frame the blacks by claiming they were drunk when they weren't. Remember anything like that at all?
Well, as a rule, people that was looking for problems
mm-hmm.
found them in things like that. But as a rule of drinking policemen, wasn't much of a problem. We were pretty strict with them, just as strict with them as we were the whites. We fired several
mm-hmm.
for drinking. Some of them we later put back like we did whites, but it created some problem, but a minor problem. I never considered it a major problem.
Do you think some whites were trying to frame the blacks at all, trying to get them off the force?
At times they were.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Yeah. So they did harass them sometimes. They did.
Huh?
They did bother them sometimes. They did try to get rid of them.
Well, they were. But those things worked themselves out pretty good. Pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
We never had the trouble with them that we anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
I recall discussing it, but the white police officers themselves knew the white troublemakers,
mm-hmm.
and generally a police officer that was on the ball and knew what he was doing, he wouldn't get involved. He would know. He could spot them.
What did you do about the white troublemakers?
About the what?
What did you do as chief about the white troublemakers? Were they fired? Were they reprimanded? The white troublemakers.
Well, we did whatever we had to do. But again, a white officer deliberately trying to cause trouble with a black police officer was easier to handle in ordinary cases.
How?
Because once you get to investigating this and he know what you're doing and he knew where your investigation would bring you, he'd know he is in trouble.
Okay.
So he'd back off pretty quickly.
Did you bring investigations against Beefum? Did you put pressure on the whites to back off?
Any place that we could,
yeah.
We had an opportunity, we did.
Okay.
And many cases we did.
There was one other one I wanted to show you. This is a fellow who became one of the first black detectives. And he said he came home one night, found a white lady on his front porch, and at that point, two white police drove up, asked him why he had this white woman on the porch, and then Bebo Brooks had told him that night, "I don't know where it's coming from, but there's a hit on you. Be careful." It sounds like the whites were out to get this black detective.
Well, there was some white people that was anti-Negro. Never could do anything about them. I mean, there was some people on the police force that was liberal with everything you want to do until it come to the race, and then they were anti-Negro, and there wasn't much you could do about it. But they were careful not to give you anything to where you could deal with them. It was, we had things working on our side in most of those cases, rather than have to act on it. McKinney was one that I remember that was really a demonstrator.
But in terms of the whites, if they really did something outrageous, then you took action against them. Is that it? If they really tried to get rid of the blacks with something very obvious, then you would begin an investigation or put pressure on them. On the whites.
And then the other police, if the other police knew about it, they'd tell you.
Tell you?
And they couldn't do much without the others knowing it. And then they would tell it. They wouldn't protect them any.
So they would tell you. They would tell the chief, right? They would tell you about what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
And then what you do?
Well, depends on what the circumstances were. It was a clear-cut violation. The police committee didn't want to try anybody for those things. They wanted to avoid them themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some good members of the police committee. Most cases, Gillum was a good member, but Huey, another member of the committee, would back you up in it.
So most of the time, nothing was done about the white police in these cases.
No, I'm just trying to think. I can't recall a case where a white policeman was disciplined or punished for abusing or mistreating the black police. Most of it was conversation or talk.
You would have a talk with them, let's say?
Pardon?
You would have a talk with the white policeman?
Always.
You would say, lay off the blacks, let's say?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Excuse me,
Mr. Oh, sure. Go ahead. Let me ask you this. When the black police came on the force, did you see any change in the black crime rate? Were the black police more effective in the black neighborhoods than the whites were?
The black policemen was what?
Were they more effective in the black communities than the whites were? In other words, was there any effect on the black crime rate?
No, that was received with mixed emotions. Basically, generally, the blacks generally favored black police.
Mm-hmm.
But quite often, it didn't. Quite often, you'd have police officers, black police officers, go for a bully, and you have some problems there. But they usually worked out pretty good. Bevo was a white captain in charge of the nigger detail. And Bevo was absolutely free from, he had no prejudice against them.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd get along with them pretty well. But it created, there was always problems there.
But there was no change in the crime rate in the black community when the black police came on the force?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't recall.
How about treatment of blacks arrested?
How about what?
The treatment of blacks when they were arrested. Did you find the treatment of blacks improved when there were black police on the force? As opposed to just when there were whites on the force.
I didn't understand. I didn't hear what you said.
I was trying to get at whether the treatment of blacks improved.
By blacks?
And well, did it improve after the blacks came on the force? How did the white police react to the black community, and how did the black police react to the black community?
Well, you know, it was a strange thing. Most white police officers didn't like to police Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were glad for Negro police to come in and police them. But they wouldn't say so and wouldn't take much action. But there was some grounds for improvement there. But still, there was a person that was disliked, prejudiced against Negro, wasn't much changing of him. He was going to hold on to that.
So there was still a problem with police brutality, even after the blacks came on the force, would you say?
Well, I think to a certain degree it still is.
Yeah, so black police on the force didn't really change attitudes towards the black community.
That's the hard answer. All of them don't think alike, you know.
Sure. Was there any difference in where station houses were located?
Pardon?
Were there police stations in the black community before they were black police?
No, the Butler Street YMCA on Butler Street gave us two rooms that we used as a police headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, and that was to protect themselves. The black police didn't wear their uniforms home to start with.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go to the police station, change here, put on the uniform and go to work, come back and pull them off and leave them there. For the simple reason that they got on the streetcar to go home, across town, somebody who wanted to cause trouble could very easily cause trouble.
So,
could demand they do certain things, and they just wanted to avoid that. And they didn't want to wear the uniform except when they was on duty.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't until long at the last. They'd go to the police station and change the uniform, put on the uniform and go to work, come back and pull it off and go home without it.
Were there white police stations in the black neighborhoods?
At the time, the black headquarters was at Butler Street YMCA on Butler Street.
Right.
That was the headquarters of the black police. And then when we moved the black police downtown to police headquarters in the basement of the building,
right,
it stayed the same way. They changed uniforms there.
In the basement.
And then later, they started wearing it home. They wear them home now, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But in terms of not the headquarters, but station houses, there were a lot of station houses around the city, police stations.
Yeah, now, but there wasn't then.
Oh, there wasn't just one?
Just one then.
Okay. Did the white police patrol the black neighborhoods before there were black police?
Oh, yeah. All the black police was on foot patrol.
Yeah.
Originally, wasn't any black police and patrol cars.
Right. Why is that?
Only way you can get them was get those on foot. Then later when we started putting them in patrol cars, then they started answering calls and become part of the patrol car.
So they weren't answering calls when they were on
foot. Huh?
They weren't answering calls when they were on foot. They were just walking around, I guess.
They're just walking where it could be.
Did white police walk around black neighborhoods also?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Originally, all police was either on foot beat or riding horses.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was riding automobiles and motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
But they've always been foot police.
Okay. And did the police give as much attention to the black neighborhoods as to the white neighborhoods? Where did they usually patrol more?
Well, patrolmen on foot patrol had a very small area. He didn't have more than two or three blocks. He'll have to stay within that two or three blocks as long as he's on foot patrol, whether he's black or white.
Yeah. But the white police, they did pay attention to the black neighbors. They did patrol there and deal with crime in those areas.
And all the patrol cars were covered large areas. All the large areas were covered by patrol cars.
Black and white patrol.
Black and white.
Neighborhoods, right.
Yeah, oh right. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I was also curious about promotions, the promotions of the police. How quickly, how slowly were the black police promoted once they were on the force?
We got to them pretty quick. I guess well, once you started promoting black police, and it didn't matter how long, how quick or how long it took from the time he was put on the force until he was promoted, you didn't promote him until he had been trained and had the experience to go through that, and that would take five or six months.
Were they promoted any differently than the whites at all?
Any what?
Any differently than the whites?
No, basically it was the same, I think.
I have I came across a statement in the newspapers from a black man by the name of Yates. Remember the name at all?
Black people doing what?
A black man by the name of Yates. Yates. A black man by the name of Yates. I think it was Yates and Milton Drugstores. Do you remember them at all?
No, black men were doing what?
He was a black man who said, this was 1960, he said that no black had been promoted in 10 years. This is 1960.
The blacks had been on the force 10 years and nobody had been promoted.
Yeah, is that true? Not true? What?
That may be true.
Okay. Why is that?
Because we wasn't considering employing black police. That was all we had before us, and we did that.
Mm-hmm.
And once that was accomplished, then our mission was completed. We weren't committed to promote them.
Okay.
We never agreed to promote them. That wasn't considered. But when they've been there long enough and you had them long enough to be promoted, then we started promoting them.
Okay. How about hiring? 1959, there were only 40 blacks out of 650 police. Was there any effort to increase the number of blacks on the force more than that?
No, it was... To start with, we, Ralph Huey introduced a resolution authorizing the personnel department to certify 8 members to be employed, and that's all the city was authorized to employ. They didn't authorize any more. The blacks was constantly agitating, wanting to add more, but I never gave it any support, and I don't know of any whites that did. They just let it drift.
Why is that?
Pardon?
Why didn't you give it more support?
No, the personnel might have wanted to add some along, but we wasn't adding, and the black leaders would call on me and insist that I demand the mayor and the board of aldermen add more policemen.
Mm-hmm.
I say, we've got the 8 that they've added, we'll add others in due time. But I never push that very much.
Well, why? Why? I mean, are you afraid of resistance from the whites? What was the problem?
You mean the difference in employing white police and black police?
No, why weren't why weren't more black police put on the force?
Well, the black would like for them all to be black.
Yeah.
You ever thought about that? If he's real black and he supports it, he's behind it, he would like for all police to be black, just like we used to insist they all be white.
Did you feel that more black police would cause more friction in the department?
It's possible. It could. If it caused, certainly it was causing some friction at the time we were putting them on.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's not even an issue, apparently they will always have a percentage black.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be a mistake to have them all black.
Well, I don't think they weren't asking for all black. They were just asking for more black police. All they had was 40 out of 650.
Well, they wasn't asking for all black, but just asking for more.
Right.
But if they keep adding more, eventually it would be all of them.
So you didn't want too many more blacks on the force? You just wanted to keep it at a small level? Is that it?
Well, that's a problem I never thought much about. I never had a situation where you had to decide where you're going to employ black police or white police. We always employ white police until we change the policy. Anyway, we were careful. You never want a 100% black police force, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't remember debating that with anybody. Except in times gone by, the black leaders used to put all the pressure they could on me to increase the number.
Right. You didn't want to increase the number, though.
Huh?
You didn't want to increase the number. You wanted to keep it about.
No, so. I never saw any need for increasing the number.
Okay. I was also curious about how much racial issues have been a factor in law enforcement in the city. How much race has been an issue in terms of the police department and law enforcement in the city.
For instance?
Well, there's two separate police unions, for example. There's the Fraternal Order of Police and there's the Afro-American Patrolmen's League. The police seem to be split in terms of in organizations between black and white. And there's now a controversy over promotions in the police department that's still going on.
Well, after black police was employed and they organized, it became a very clear-cut issue. There's no question I think any time an organization gets organized, it's for the simple purpose of promoting its membership.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't organize them to promote black leadership or black membership, wouldn't be any purpose in organizing them.
Did you feel there was a split in the police department between black and white? Did they get along very well?
I don't think there's any question of what there's always, it always comes up.
There was a split, then you would say?
Not only amongst the members of the police department, but those people that's representing members of the police department, they represent the racial fiction more than anybody else.
So you feel the police department was sort of split between whites and blacks?
Oh, quite definitely.
And did they get along with each other that well otherwise?
Well, there can be issues raised, and that's what the leaders raise, those issues, those racial issues.
Yeah.
Get them to go one way or the other.
Like what?
Yeah.
Like what issue?
Huh?
Like what issue, for example? What issue would they raise?
Well, a lawyer representing Afro-American
mm-hmm.
can raise the issue that you're promoting six lieutenants and they're all white.
Yeah.
He can insist that they be half and half. Which that's not the issue, in my opinion. That shouldn't be the issue. And they shouldn't let him or anybody else make it the issue.
I was also curious during the integration period, during the sit-ins, during the period of the sit-ins, during the 60s, did you meet with the black leaders during that time?
Oh, yeah.
And what sort of things did you discuss about the sit-ins?
Well, the highest value of the law is keeping of the peace.
Mm-hmm.
Always insisted on that.
So trying to keep the demonstrations peaceful?
But the purpose for having a meeting and an organization and a demonstration is to create a problem.
Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, you did meet with the black leaders to try and keep things peaceful, if you could.
Well, I met with them on many occasions. Again, Preacher Walden and Preacher, those two preachers, they were helpful in keeping the peace.
Mm-hmm. How did you use black police during the sit-ins? How were they used?
How did you
use black police during the sit-in demonstrations?
During a demonstration?
Yeah. Were the black police used?
Well, I don't recall had a policeman sign there whether he's black or white.
Mm-hmm.
His job is the same, is to keep the peace.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the highest value of the law is keeping of the peace.
But the black police weren't used in any special way.
Black policemen do what?
The black police weren't used in any special way used, they weren't used in any special way during the sit-ins?
No, a policeman very much liked this. I know Brooks used to say, talking about Hooks, look at old Hooks. He acts like he's been on the police force 4 years. I mean, he fits in. And there's one named Jones, he would make more arrests than any other on the police force, black or white. But he just active in enforcing the law.
There were no problems between white and black police during the demonstrations and sit-ins?
No. Lester Maddox and his group was the only one that created problems between the blacks and the whites.
Okay.
You know, I had some good experience at Tech. I managed to persuade Tech to create their own police force.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
I think Melvin Carpenter was the first chief of Tech, led high police officer to be in charge of all of that police.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the problem to work out.
When did the Black Watch end? When you had the Black Watch, a separate Black Watch, when did that end? When you had the blacks reporting at a different time?
Well, we didn't, they didn't put any blacks to start with. To start with, all the police at Tech were white.
Oh, no, I'm not at Tech. I mean in the city.
I don't know when they added black. I don't think they added black until, I think I'd already gone before they ever added any blacks over there.
I mean, not at Tech, I mean in Atlanta, in the city.
Huh?
In the city itself. You had the blacks reporting at one time, you had the whites reporting another time. Do you remember when that stopped?
No, I'm talking about, the Tech police reported the Tech itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the city wasn't involved in that. We didn't get involved in that. Tech employed their own police.
But I mean in the city.
Huh?
In the city, when you were chief of the Atlanta police.
Yeah.
You had the blacks reporting at a different time than the whites at the beginning.
Well, originally it was all white, and then we added 8 blacks.
Yeah.
And kept adding to them, increasing the number.
But they reported, there was a black watch, wasn't there? They reported at a different time than the white police?
Oh, yeah.
And okay, why did you have that?
Oh, yeah, that's the reason we put a separate precinct. So they could report separate. The blacks and whites report separate and work different places. The blacks just work in footbeat. Mm-hmm. That's all they worked that time. And the whites was working both footbeat and patrol calls.
Okay. And when did that stop? When did the blacks begin reporting at the same time as the whites?
Just before I left from down there.
About 1970, you think?
Must have been about, I left in 72, must have been I guess early 70s.
Mm-hmm. And when did blacks begin patrolling white neighborhoods?
About the same time.
Yeah. So in other words, they were allowed to arrest whites earlier, back in the 60s.
Well, I remember we made it very clear that if a black police officer saw a white person that he thought ought to be arrested,
mm-hmm.
he was to call police headquarters and report it there, and they'd send a patrol car.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'd work it out from there. And I remember two black detectives called me at the police station and reported to me that they had arrested it was in a hotel on Auburn Avenue, and the owner complained that there was two white whores working at a hotel, and he asked them to check on them and see about them. They checked on them, and they found them, two black men in the room with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrested all four of them. And they called me and asked me, what was this supposed to do, call white detectives? I told them, no, under the circumstances, just book all four of them into jail and appear in court and prosecute them. Because they were working a black hotel,
mm-hmm.
and found white people in there.
How were the black police treated in court?
Well, I depend on the case and depend on the judge. I think basically. It depends on the judge, but it depends on the judge's attitude. I think he was fair and honest with them. If he wasn't, it would depend on the individual. It wouldn't be I never had any problems there, though. Don't recall any ever complaining.
Did the white police back up the black police in court if they had to testify?
Generally they would. There may be individual cases where they would disagree.
Yeah.
Otherwise, but basically they would be, basically they were fair. And of course, the judge would be the one that had to make the difference in the court. The police couldn't make any difference in the court.
Right.
Police may take him to court, but the judge had to pass on it.
Well, okay. I think that